Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPN 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We are back in the House of Mystery. Thank you for joining us. Today we have author from the UK, C.A. Asprey. Thank you for being here, Christine.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, Christine, it looks like you've written a lot of books, and it's all about the innocents. So what got you into writing? Where did the writing bug come from?
To be honest, it's something I wanted to do all my life, but I think like many people, careers and family and real life get in the way. And I had quite a long career, which gave me lots and lots of experiences, which helped me write eventually. But I was slowed down by a very serious accident in 2005, and that's when I thought, wait a minute, I've now got time to finally do what I've always wanted to do. So I started writing these books, a series of books.
Yeah, I noticed now, okay, so your books, you like to focus on things like, you say you have the early forensic and detection methods and and the Victorian sort of era. What made you go that direction?
You know, I don't know why the Victorian era has always fascinated me. There's a number of things about it that attract me. I mean, I know we think of them as being old fogies and it's quite a staid era, but actually the average age in the Victorian era was quite young. The majority of the population were quite young. They actually saw themselves as quite thrusting and forward-thinking. Technology was moving at a really rapid pace. The country was opening up. The railways brought towns together, unified time zones. Communication was there with the telegraph. All these things means that from the beginning of the century to the end of the century, you went from a very much an old world to the beginning of the modern world within that period. And and the technology and the fact it moved at an exponential rate. So I've always found that really, really interesting. And the way it sits around old world values, as well as people pushing against that to bring things into modern time, that struggle has always been quite interesting for me, and the hypocrisies of the era as well.
But you know, that must take a lot of research to go back to that time and to make sure you get things right, because it's all got to be very, precise. You've got to have the details correct, otherwise people, you know, they that kind of bothers a reader, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. things like that have always bothered me, and I've been very lucky to have been congratulated on the veracity of the things. And quite often I'm bringing in things that were invented much earlier than people actually think they were, because there are certain things that we think the Victorians wouldn't have, but in fact they did. The fax was invented before the telephone, for instance. So it's really interesting to use things that people think are anachronisms, but they're not, because it tells us more about the era and the way that we saw humanity was starting to change as well. Equal rights were starting to be pushed for in a way that had never been happened before. The society was changing, ideas were changing, science was changing, religion was changing. It was being challenged by science, it was being challenged by society, who wanted religion to serve them rather than just dictate to them. It certainly in Europe, and especially in Scotland, that was happening. So it's a time that I find absolutely fascinating. I've spent years researching it, mainly because it's just something I'm very interested in.
I was going to say, that must take a long time to get everything right, as well as not only the, you know, the how society was and science and all that you're talking about, but also the way people spoke and the way their mannerisms were quite different.
They absolutely were. One of my bugbears is when I look at women on screen wearing long skirts, clutching them up and hiking them up in front of them, they actually twisted them to the side. And you'd see old photographs or footage of women walking in long skirts. They didn't pull them up from the front. But that's what all the actresses do. You know, there's so many little things that people take for granted that actually never happened. And they, even sexually, they were much more experimental than people think. They just generally weren't that way with their wives. So it's a fascinating time for all the dichotomy that they had.
Is there something?
As I say, I've spent years reading about it and researching it and compiling notes on it. So it's it all came to fruition when I eventually was slowed down.
Yeah, is there something you think that we get really wrong with what Victorian era was and the way people were?
Yeah, I think people think that they were very staid, very strict. They were strict, but probably not in the way that you think. They were a lot more demonstrative, I think, than people believe them to be. Men cried a lot more often in Victorian times than they did in the early 20th century, and there are many, many records of that. The men actually wept much more easily. It was more acceptable, especially for things like deaths and things like that. But then, the beginning of the 20th century, that was becoming something that you did in private, if you did it at all. So quite a few things, even like just small things, like one conversation I have in one of the books about the wearing of wedding rings, taken for granted that it's always the third finger of the left hand. Well, no, that wasn't the case at all. Many men didn't wear them at all until well into the 20th century. And if they did, most Europeans, the Northern Europeans and the British, they wore them on the little finger of the left hand. So women wore them on the third finger of the left hand, but not men. So there's lots of things that people think are much older than they are.
So now, this is a series of books, I guess, The Innocents. What's the premise behind that?
Yeah, well, the premise behind it is anybody who's looked at my blog or knows anything about me, I'm an ex-police officer. And when I first started, and I was trained by one of the older police women, and she joined years and years back. I joined in the 70s, so she had joined in the 50s, and then she was telling tales of what women in the police service from wartime had told her, and she was very, very good at telling stories and making them very funny. And I found her stories about all these women in law enforcement going way back wonderful. And I just wondered, why have I never heard of these before? I was even interested enough to join the police, but nobody ever told me these stories about all these amazing women and what they did. So I started to look back at how the first women in law enforcement, and the first ones I found going back and back and back in the UK and Europe, it was largely around World War One to fill in for men. And then in the USA, you get some occasional sheriff or deputy or something of that nature. But the Pinkerton Department, the Pinkerton Detective Agency, are the first to employ women as fully fledged detectives. And they did the same job as men. They were very, very well trained. Alan Pinkerton was very much a proponent of modern policing and the scientific method that was taking root in Europe for detecting at that time, and he would collate all of these techniques and bring them into detectives, and he trained the women in them as well. So I it made me think, well, why have I never heard much about these amazing women? Many of us have heard of Kate Warren and her amazing work as a spy during the Civil War and immediately after, and the murders and the thefts and things that she investigated. But they specialised in working undercover to gain intelligence. And I thought, I don't want to write about Kate Warren. I think a lot has been written about her. I want to write about a character, another character, who did that type of work, just as a detective. And I've read books about with female Pinkertons in them, but I've always found them to be either a love interest or a sidekick, and I wanted to make a fully fledged, intelligent, modern, in the Victorian sense, detective with an interest in science and who's very good at her job and very dedicated to her job. And then when I created this character, I then wanted to give her some really good opponents, so I've created the Innocents, which I suppose if you your nearest equivalent would be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid from the movie. And just imagine if a very intelligent, skilled, undercover female detective had been on their trail. And that's basically the premise of these books.
Hmm. Now, one thing that caught me was that you say it's based on fictionalized versions of real crimes. So if you explain that to us, that would be kind of, so you're saying you're taking a real crime that happened, and you're applying your fictional character detective to it.
Yes. Not all of the crimes are fictionalized, because I usually have more than one crime in the book, and they link into one another, and sometimes they act as a red herring to another crime and things of that nature. But what I'll do is I'll take a real crime, but then I'll change it, because aficionados of real crime would be able to spot that and then know who did it. And I hate reading a book knowing who did it.
Right.
So I will change it up. So what I always say is everything in the book is possible, but it didn't necessarily happen.
Well,
it absolutely could have happened in the time, because it's based on real events. For instance, the first book, there's something that's based on the Bloody Benders in Kansas, but that's been changed up a bit, and everybody knows about the Bloody Benders in Kansas and how they killed people who they caught out on the plains, and then they disappeared. Of course, my version is different, but it's based upon people who prey on people out in the roads in a similar sense. Of course, there's another crime mixed through it as well, and the two feed into each other, and you don't know whether they're connected and whether they don't, because I like to make it a wee bit hard for the reader to guess who done it.
How do you pick what crime you're going to use in the book, then, if they're real crimes?
What I tend to do is I'll choose something that catches my interest. The Benders were interesting because they disappeared. We never really found them again, did we? So So they're interesting for that. That what they did to people in themselves is just, we call it modern day robbery and mugging and whatever. It's in itself is nothing that glamorous, but it catches in imagination and places it in a time and space and things that are actually going on around that time. So it anchors your story. Then what I'll do is I will also add an invented crime on top of that and muddle the two together. All the clues are in the books. That's one of my rules. You can always guarantee that every clue that you need is in the book, but you might not have spotted it.
So now, your character, your main character, Detective Abigail McKay, how is it that you have created her? Like, where does that person come from?
Well, they say write what you know, and I did work in the States for many years, and if there's one thing I know, it's about working in the USA as a Scottish woman. So that gave me that idea, and there's various humorous bits that you can get from people not understanding her accent or mispronouncing things or that you can throw in there just to humanise it and make it a bit humorous, because people do comment on the fact that the books can also be quite funny as well.
Yeah. But who do you draw from other people you actually know or have seen or met to develop that
Abigail's
character?
Abigail's an amalgam of lots of women I've actually worked with. I've had people say that they think she's like me, but I don't think she is. She's more emotional than me, and she's cleverer than me. She knows stuff that I have to look up. But she's a bit of a flawed character, as in she's got a tragic past. Pinkerton didn't take married women, but she is a Mrs. McKay. That's how Scots pronounce that, McKay. We pronounce it McKay. She is Mrs. McKay, and she is a widow. And so she's got a tragic past, and she's lonely. And due to bereavement, she can be prone to melancholia, as they called it in those days, which we now know as depression. So she has her own flaws and her own problems and what have you. And it's all goes to make a much more rounded character, whereas I'm not at all prone to that sort of thing. And as I say, I think she's more emotional than me, and she's a lot cleverer than me. I also think she's more determined than I am, although she's a strong woman who knows what she wants to do, and she's very dedicated to her job. She wants to do it basically because she suffered tragic loss, and she wants to help people in that same situation get some justice, and that's what her driver is. And then she meets these criminals that she's sent to bring in, and they're not at all what she expects them to be. She's quite confounded by them.
So does it ever surprise you sometimes what the character ends up doing?
Oh, yeah, I love it when that happens. I absolutely love it when that happens. And
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It always makes for a better scene. And I've had even minor characters run off. I had someone aimed up as the main murderer suddenly shoot herself. And I thought, where did that come from? So I went with it and ended up with a much better story.
So do you have an underlying theme to your book? Like, so when someone picks up one of your books and they're reading it and they get through the story, is there something else you're trying to pass on to that reader?
I think the theme that of all my books would really be redemption. It's that it's never too late to start again and to move forward in a positive way. That's true for the criminals that she comes across, and it's true for her. And it's always about driving not just those characters, but also making society a better and a fairer place.
Wow. Well, hopefully people start reading.
I hope so too.
Yeah, we need more of it. It's crazy. So do you find that the outside influences around you affect how you write?
Yes, definitely. I can't write when I'm upset. When the COVID thing first happened, there were lots of deaths here and whatever. Pardon me. It was quite upsetting, and I found I couldn't write. And speaking to lots of writer friends, they were all in the same boat. I think that's an Achilles heel for a lot of writers, is being upset. But then once you have time to marinate that, you end up using it in your book.
Oh, so do you think you get a little darker when because of it, or how do you think it comes out?
For me, I always have a combination of dark and light anyway. Some of the scenes in the book are very funny. Some of the books are quite dark. One of the books in particular is very dark. And I have had to warn readers about it because it really takes the main character to some very dark places indeed. But in the end, it shows that you can get through the hard times, and it does turn round at the end. But I've had people say to me, oh, I can't read this anymore, it's too much for me. And as a writer, that's you want them to read your book, but it's also a huge compliment because it means that you're touching them, your writing's actually making them feel something.
Wow. How do you feel about your characters? Like, do you have a relationship with them? Like, I hear all sorts of writers that do fiction, especially in crime, they tend to consider their characters children at times, or they call them all sorts of endearing names. How do you feel?
Yeah, I don't have a name for them, but they definitely run around in my head, and they can go off in their own direction at times. And I know a lot of people do that. And sometimes you're struggling with a scene, you just lie in bed and you just give them free rein and off they go, and they'll go and do their own thing. And as I say, it always makes for a better story. I think they're almost like self-contained personas in your head of each different one, and you know who each one is. They're completely different people. When one of them speaking, you feel their body language, you feel how they talk, how they move, how they how they feel about the other people round about them. It's very, very odd. It's almost like a schizophrenic situation, but it's creative. It's very hard to explain and sound sane.
Yeah, no, I know. I find it very interesting how writers do that. I don't know. I don't know how you do it. So
I don't know how you. I don't know how I would write a character that I couldn't do that with. I was starting a new series just now that's going to be set in the UK, and there's one of the characters that I've been struggling with, and he's only just starting to come to life for me now. I'm only just finding out who he is and what he does and what his motivations are. I had an idea of who he would be, but he's not turned out to be the same as I thought he would be. Now he's starting to meld into a person in my head.
It's interesting. Who do you read for influence, or do you?
Oh, I started reading very, very early. I was two when I started to read. I joined the adult section of the library when I was about nine, and I started I cut my teeth on Agatha Christie around that time. And I think I've read everything I can get my hands on crime, whodunits, murders, true crime, the psychology behind crime, psychoanalysis of criminals. I've just read voraciously my whole life, and I like to think that all of that has been put together. Of course, there's things I've learned in my work as well that comes into it as well. So it's just been a culmination of a journey, shall we say.
Wow. How do you feel about the writing world? Do you like the way things are now with Amazon and the freedom that comes with it? Or how do you feel?
I'm fairly new to writing. I mean, I only got a publishing deal just a few years ago. Before that, I'd never self-published or anything. I have no problem with people self-publishing their books. All power to them. I think it can be too hard to get in front of a publisher for many people. I myself was rejected by many before if I found someone who would take them on. They told me that Westerns weren't selling, and I said, that's fair enough. It's not a Western, though. It's a series that it starts in the West, but like the Pinkertons did, they go all over the USA and even into Canada, because that's where they worked. But it's not a Western. And then I was also told that it's, as a love story, it moved too slow. And I said, well, it's not a love story. There's a building relationship between the two characters, but really, a Victorian upright woman wouldn't jump into bed with a criminal in the first two chapters. There's lots of people who did not get what I was doing. And I wanted to make the characters quite realistic in the place and time. And yes, there is a growing relationship between my main character and one of the main criminals. They're both different sides of the same coin. She uses the sciences to solve crimes. He uses them to commit them. But when you find out his backstory, you find out there's a lot of reasons why he ended up as a criminal. And they're really quite tragic as well. And strangely, they echo things that have been happening recently in the USA as well, the discrimination of immigrants. And his family were caught up in anti-Catholic riots and killed. They ended up being put in care. He was going to be sold for cheap labour to a farm, then so he ran off, and by running off, he ended up falling into bad company. And because he was clever, his crimes tended to not be petty crimes. He tended to be very good at it because he was a very clever man. And he's the other side of her coin, if you like. She's used all those powers to solve crime and investigate them, but they are inextricably drawn to one another. So that's something that builds and builds and builds throughout the series. It's more of a will they, won't they, than a don't go in expecting to be full-blown romance, because it's not. They are they are mysteries with romance in them.
So now with these innocents, you really kind of have to read them in order, don't you? Or can they be read on their own?
I'm told you can read them on their own, but they're much better in order. They are definitely much more much better in order. The first three, they start with each. How can I put it? Each one has a self-contained whodunit that doesn't relate to a previous book, but the books connect with an overarching story of the relationship between the main characters and also between the main criminal, the hero or the anti-hero, if you want to call him that, because he's a criminal. His arch-enemy is determined to get him killed, and he doesn't care who else gets killed in the process. So that overarching story, they connect with a much bigger crime, and they culminate in book six. So the whole series is out there. The connection is the much, much larger crime, and the larger crime is what's exposed in book six at the end. But each one has a self-contained murder mystery in it.
Hmm. So where do you see yourself going with this series? Is this something you're going to keep going for a long time?
Well, I thought I'd finished it, but people have been asking for more, so you never know. I'll never say never.
Never say never. Well, are you going to go into other areas of writing, other styles?
I've started writing a whodunit that's based in the UK. I'm about halfway through that one. And again, I can't do anything that's normal. So I have to do something that's a bit weird. So it's a case of a woman who's on the run for a murder that she didn't commit, who knocks on a door of a convent looking for some sanctuary. And of course, these aren't real nuns. So things get strange from there, and not just for her, but for the detective that's on her trail as well.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that's good. What do you recommend for someone that's a new writer? What would you tell them they should do?
Write. And it's a case of give it to people that you trust. Not people who are going to tell you what you want to hear, but people who will tell you what's wrong with it. I've been very, very lucky to have friends who've done that for me.
Hmm. Yeah, it's important. So a lot of feedback do you take to heart, people that give reviews and things like that as well, or do you kind of stay away from that?
I don't look at the reviews very often, I must admit, but the feedback I take is from the people that I know have my best interests at heart. I mean, for instance, the feedback from publishers saying that Westerns aren't selling, well, it's not a Western, this isn't romantic enough. That's feedback that I threw aside. I think you have to be able to filter your feedback as to whether or not you can use it or not. If it's not useful for you to improve, then throw it away. If it's only going to undermine you and stop you from writing, it's not useful. It's my philosophy.
Right. Right. No, it's interesting. It's good. Now, do you have a website or a blog or something like that as well that you think people should come find you at?
I do. I have a blog. It's just called caastrate.com, and it's contains all sorts of things, not just bits about my writing, but I collect lots of obscure murders and crimes and strange and odd historical facts in Victoriana, and it's all sorts of, even the mundane things like what did women do when they had their periods, for instance, in the past. You never taught this stuff at school,
right.
And it's all this mundane stuff, and funnily enough, it's those sort of pages that get the most hits. And then of course there's the major crimes and the scandals, and another bit I like is the crimes that don't get committed anymore.
Oh.
Because I find that quite fun. Things like impersonating a relative that's gone missing. That doesn't happen anymore, not since we've had DNA. And things of that nature.
Yeah,
So yeah. I quite like to play with those.
Yeah, I guess that would be interesting, right? Because that's something you could get away with. There wasn't a lot of DNA or photos.
Yeah, and there's some famous cases where the person, there's a famous Australian one where the guy turned up and he was about 6 inches taller and really, really much heavier. He was the son of a butcher boy instead of the lord that he was supposed to be, that was lost at sea. But the mother was desperate to have her son back, so accepted him. And it wasn't until the mother died that the rest of the family drummed him out as an imposter. But that was a court case that went on for years and years and years as he hung on to this false identity and possibly the money. I like things like that, and there's things like that in the blog. And there's another one that's quite, another page that people find very popular are the boy and women that signed up to fight in the Civil War. And you look at their pictures, there are lots and lots of pictures there, and they're very obviously not fully grown men. They're either boys or they're women, and it's so obvious, but they signed up and they did unusual things. I like the unusual sides of history. There's lots and lots of pages of that in there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how much has happened, and to look back and to not to realize it, and then all of a sudden you find out. I think it's great. Yeah, it's very enlightening. Very enlightening. Okay, so what is up next for C.A. Asprey?
Well, I'm going to finish this book, to finish the one I'm working on, and get that out to publishers and take it from there. And if people like that, then there's possibly a new series with these very odd nuns.
Well,
you aren't really nuns, so you don't have to worry about it being all religious or prim and proper. They're the complete opposite of that.
That's good. Sounds fun. Wow. Well, we're going to have your books, your website up, connected to ours, your blog site, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. And our guest today is C.A. Asprey, and the series we're talking about is The Innocents. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's been lovely to speak to you. And thank you for inviting me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show.
To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.